Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Good Saturday morning. Hey, look, people are worried. They're talking about the stock market. You know, I'm getting lots of questions. You know, the stock market goes up, it goes down. It's done that for my entire 50-year management of money history. Actually, it's started in 1983, so it's 41 years that I've been managing money. You know, I get a lot of questions. People say, where do I put my money? People are worried. All right, so the wrong question, how do I protect my money? The right question is, how can your money protect you? Money's not a goal or an end in itself. It's something that we want to use as a tool. Sometimes we call it a weapon to help people protect liberty, security, and values. Help people share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Help people, you know, take care of the family and take care of those who are less fortunate than they are. Money is something we use. It's not something we're supposed to aspire to or have a goal. We've got Mike Carter with us this morning. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Kevin. Great to be here.
Glad to have you here. All right, I want to start with this. There are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, you can invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And you know, it's good to know that money is something we can use, but not something we're supposed to covet, demand. Yeah, it's not the goal in itself.
Well, I was just looking at, you said the right question is how can your money protect you? And I'm looking at all the news geopolitically out there, the BRIC nations, all this stuff out there. And I'm starting to think, what do I need to be thinking about differently right now?
Well, you know, the biggest threat, what is it? I think it's inflation, the dollar, that sort of thing. And that's something we've been talking about for years. We've got the book Secret Weapon.
Good memories.
Pulled it out. It's written in 2012 based on my first 4 years in the economic warfare space.
What was it? We used to have a tagline. It's a modern day spy novel. This is fact. A lot of great prediction here. I forget who made the quote, but it does fit the theme.
I think it was Kevin Hassett, who was President Trump. Later, he became President Trump's chief counsel on economic advisors. He was the chairman of the Council on Economic Advisor. And he said, let's see if I can find it in here, a modern-day spy novel or something like that.
Because the reality of it is, I mean, I remember going early on as you were having these discussions and the things that happened within D.C. where they didn't want some of this information to get out. And we were meeting in restaurants, looking over our shoulders like, is this something more serious than we believe even? I thought that theme fit well.
Here is Kevin Hassett. When Kevin Freeman, after an impressive career in finance, well, that was nice of him, began investigating the possibility that terrorists are manipulating our markets, he suddenly found himself inside a real-world spy novel. There's so much smoke surrounding a study of economic warfare that the only question is not whether there is a fire, but rather how far it is spread. Thank you, Kevin Hassett. You know, he might be the head of economic advisors again if President Trump gets back.
Well, it'd be great to have someone that has that experience and that perspective, because we're starting a fire back then. We're, 10, 12 years ahead now, and it feels like we're moving into a blaze right now.
I know. We played that clip from Jared Bernstein, who's has that position now under President Biden. You know, he's right. His chief, and he's there in that clip. He's just saying, you know, we do print money and lots of it, and we borrow money. Totally confused. I love Kevin Hassett. I think he's a brilliant guy. Had the opportunity to debate him and 34 of his finest friends when he was at AEI in Washington. Went in a debate, and I tried to convince them that we were really facing economic warfare. He didn't believe me at first, but I think I convinced him.
And AEI stands for what?
American Enterprise Institute.
Okay.
It's a conservative think tank.
Yeah, and a lot of smart people I know. And you convinced the group by the end, though, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. They had the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, the top people that contributed to that report, and they were all telling us, you know, the cause of the financial failure was exclusively failure of American government decisions and so forth. And that had an absolute role in it, but economic warfare had a role in it too.
We're seeing that today for sure. And just look at, you know, I remember back, you know, the 2008, I was back in the home building industry and things were booming and then they weren't. And we thought we were safe here in Texas and then we weren't. But it looks like we've got more threats on the horizon now and we don't have as much ammunition.
Yeah, no, that's the scary thing. In 2012, when I wrote the book Secret Weapon, you go further back, in 2009, when I wrote the report for the Pentagon, we talked very clearly that, you know, 10, 15 years out, we would be facing what I call phase three. And it's found in the book, Secret Weapon. Let's see if I can pull up page 202. I put a little show. It says, the beginning. This is phase three. If the Chinese were to undercut the dollar, they'd begin by encouraging investment in gold. Then it lists how the Chinese started importing gold. You know, that's just been their trend since 2011, 2012, 2013, I guess, when they decided to de-Americanize the world, end the dollar's use of world reserve currency. I also put in here, there's a whole section, I think it's on page 174, describing the BRIC danger. Nobody knew what BRIC was.
Yeah, well, it became BRIC, then it became BRICS, right? South Africa came in afterwards, and now it's gone from four countries to, I think the latest I've seen, there's 90 countries.
Well, there's at least 30 that have applied for membership. It is a good chunk of the world. Is it up to 90?
I heard up to 90 were interested. They're not all on board yet, but you know, as they try and build their momentum and messaging, I've heard there's up to 90 countries looking at this thing.
Including the scary one is Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about that at a future Pirate Money radio program. We're going to be talking about the petrodollar and the role Saudi Arabia has played in that and how important that is. But you know, when I wrote this book in 2012, I think our debt was, you know, $12, $13 trillion. When I wrote my initial paper in 2008, our total reported debt of the federal government was $10 trillion. In just 15 years, it's gone from $10 trillion to $35 trillion.
Wow. And at that time, I remember them saying, BRICS, oh, that's nothing. They'll never have an impact. The dollar is always going to be the world's reserve currency.
That's what they said, yeah. So how did we get here? Well, the book Secret Weapon basically tells the story. So you remember when I was doing that initial Pentagon report, our mutual friend Pat in Tulsa, mm-hmm. I had him hide files in his house, and the research couldn't get out. Met with the FBI, a mutual friend from high school FBI. And man, it was an incredible period. But in 2008, you were in the home building business.
I was, and life was great. And we saw what was happening around the country, but we saw, you know, well, Texas is safe. It's not going to hit here, but it eventually did come back and hit us here at the same time. So, you know, looking at things and having a game plan and being able to say, okay, what we can see on the horizon, how can we be best prepared? That's what this show is about. That's what you do such a great job of, Kevin. I mean, the stuff that's in here is applying today, and that was 13 years ago.
Well, knowing how we got here, I think, is important. I'd like to kind of walk through it. In 2008, like you said, housing was booming. Home builders thought they were on top of the world. We had a housing bubble, as they look back on it now. And then we had a housing bust. And when we really got the first hint of this was in the spring of 2008 when Bear Stearns, the big brokerage firm, most people don't even know what a Bear Stearns is, but it was a big Wall Street firm. It was very famous, 100-year history kind of thing, and it failed. And then all of a sudden we started wondering, will my bank fail too? And that's what happened. We had bailouts. We had this Community Reinvestment Act. We had bad bank loans. A lot of people that maybe shouldn't have gotten loans, they called them, what was it, the term they used? Was it liar loans? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
Low doc loans is what they called them. They also called them liar loans because you say, oh, yeah, I made $500,000 last year. And they didn't ask for any confirmation. Easy money was the creation of the bubble and the problem that we saw. And that was what started in 2008. But what most people don't know is foreign governments began an active financial terrorism to take down America. We'll cover this and so much more right after this break. Here's a $10 bill. It's got the picture of Alexander Hamilton on the front of it. You know, it's kind of sad. When I was 10 years old, everything that I could buy for a dollar now costs about $10. That's the cost of inflation. It's just paper. It's not backed by anything. You can't exchange it for gold and silver. You used to, but you can't do that anymore. And that's unfortunate. You know, pirates wouldn't accept this. Pirates, they wanted gold and silver. Patriots, the founders of this nation, also wanted gold and silver coin. In fact, they put a provision in the Constitution, 17 words, that said states could only make gold and silver coins tender within the states. That's why I wrote this new book, Pirate Money, Discovering the Founders' Hidden Plan for Economic Justice and Defeating the Great Reset. It will explain exactly the history of money and exactly why gold and silver coins can be made modern with new technology and a useful monetary system. PirateMoneyBook.com.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, we're talking about what was taking place in 2008. You know, that's 16 years ago, but it has direct implication for the financial problems that we're dealing with today. And I wrote a book about this called Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Brought Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. And that book was based on some research that I did for the Pentagon. I remember this almost as if it was yesterday, the 2008 financial collapse. You remember it, Mike?
I do. But, you know, let's kind of walk through kind of that timeline of what happened back then and how this book came into play and where we're at today, I guess.
Well, we had this housing bubble, 2006, 2007, you know, home prices just kept going up. You know, that's kind of happened recently again, doesn't it? That happens every few decades here in America.
They keep saying they're never going to go back down. And then I saw home prices just were at the highest ever this last quarter on the Case-Shiller Index. So it continues to go. My daughter was today, should I buy a house or not buy a house? But it does feel like we're headed towards that bubble again to me.
Yeah, you know, it's only called a bubble in hindsight. Mm-hmm. While you're in it, you're just like, no, houses are still cheap and we need to buy more. But in 2008, it was a bubble. We know that. And what happened is we had a bunch of people borrowing money, maybe more than they should. We had the Community Reinvestment Act that says banks, hey, look, you're being racist. And so you need to make sure that you can, it's like, kind of like DEI today, You need to loan money to make sure every ethnic group and everybody is equally represented in the housing dream. And I think that's a worthy, laudable goal, but only if people can actually afford the house that they're buying.
Absolutely. And it's not solved the wealth gap as we can see today. None of that's happened.
Yeah, no, they were making bad loans and it ruined some people financially. It caused prices to go up irrationally. And yeah, we had a housing bubble and Bear Stearns was one of them that was buying subprime mortgages, subprime, you know, less than optimal mortgages. And they were buying them, packaging them together and then selling them to an unsuspecting public, calling it, you know, a AAA debt because they packaged them just right. But hidden inside that AAA debt were some really bad loans that should never have been made. And Bear Stearns failed. And people started wondering, you know, are there other cracks in the system? And banks started failing. You remember that? Washington Mutual and all these banks, there were so many banks around.
They were building on every corner. And I would joke to my wife, you know, I remember when savings and loans used to be like this. They were like buying every corner and going on every location and nonstop. And then they were gone.
Yeah, you'd have an account with one bank with one name on a Friday. And when you woke up Monday morning, you got an email or a notice or it was on the radio that bank has changed its name. And they were being consolidated into Bank of America or J.P. Morgan or, you know, the big banks started sucking up all those little banks.
While all that was going on, I remember going to the gas pump and I remember literally gas was going up hit over $4 a gallon, $4.25. I'm like, what is happening here?
Well, oil hit $149.75 a barrel, I think, on the futures markets, which is, about double what it is today. And they told us that oil was going to run out. The Chinese were buying every bit of oil. It was permanent. It was going to $300 a barrel. And you know what was really happening? Every tanker, every oil storage facility was full of oil. There wasn't a shortage. It was full. And we were entering a recession because we had these banks failing, the housing bust. And all of a sudden, people were wondering, why do oil prices go up in a recession? They should be going down, right?
Absolutely. And it was frustrating to me because at the time when everything started to hit at the same time, you're looking at your own economics, your own pocketbook, and you're like, I just want to travel to go visit some family. And it's like, do I really want to spend $4 plus a gallon to fill this car up just to do that?
Yeah. And that was in Texas and Oklahoma. It was $4 a gallon. It was much higher other parts of the country. Bottom line, what was happening is two sovereign wealth funds in the Middle East, Abu Dhabi and Qatar, were buying through Barclays Bank in London and through a group that they knew of in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which is where I met you, Mike, was Tulsa, Oklahoma. There's a group called Sim Group who says this oil price is irrational and they were shorting it, which is what you do when prices are too high, you sell it short. But the sovereign wealth funds were buying in the futures market and they were thus driving up the price of oil. So they were buying fake oil for delivery in the future, not really fake. It's going to be delivered in the future in the futures market. And they were bidding up the price. And everybody says, well, the price is going up. So therefore, the spot price stayed higher than it would and actually kept going up. In the middle, entering recession, I call this phase one in the book, Secret Weapon. This was an economic terrorist attack on America with oil prices just going higher. And that's part of what sent Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs and others into this riskier position that caused their stocks to drop on Wall Street.
So the oil countries were helping, they were profiting off of this, obviously. And I know we're just seeing a petrodollar, our petrodollar going away. And it seems like with the BRICS nations, they're trying to take some of that power back again. Are we starting to see this happen again?
We're seeing a lot of the same thing. That's why you got to study history, because if you don't study it and understand it, you're doomed to repeat it. And that's where we are today. All right. So almost 16 years ago to the day, let me tell you first, I got notice from a guy named Michael Del Rosso, who is a national security expert. He is an electrical engineering expert. He works a lot in the anti-EMP space, wanting to protect our electric grid. And he said, what's going on? And I said, I think it could be financial terrorism. And then shortly after, I got a call from Eric Davidson at Wells Fargo, who I used to be business partners with, and he was like the chief investment officer of Wells Fargo. And he says, this looks a little like financial terrorism. So all of these things are going on, and I'm beginning to realize, you know, here I'm a money manager in Texas, beginning to realize that our stock market is coming under fire, just like the oil came under fire.
Yeah, yeah. I remember, and Eric Davidson we've had on the show multiple times since then, but it was you two guys working. It's like the classical entrepreneur story. You're sitting at a restaurant somewhere, and you're writing, if you're, I'm not going to take down the market, this is how we do it. You did that on the back of a napkin.
Yeah, no, it's a Four Seasons meeting with two.
Four Seasons, a little higher end, but
two guys that were working in national security. Working, one of them was working with Joint Chiefs of Staff. He was an Army Major, Steve Coughlin, and former FBI counterterrorism expert John Guandolo. And they said, "What's going on?" And so I wrote it out on a napkin. And I do remember almost 16 years to the day, the Republican convention in 2008. John McCain has been announced as winning the Republican nomination. He's picked Sarah Palin as his running mate. They're going up against Barack Obama, who's the Democrat candidate who'd beaten Hillary Clinton in a surprise. And I shared with then Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, who was on the House Financial Services Committee and the House Intelligence Committee, I sat down and I said, hey, this is financial terrorism. And if we don't address this, it will impact the 2008 election. You will see McCain lose and you will see Obama win if we don't address this. And sadly enough, that's almost exactly what happened. But while I was talking to the congresswoman, my phone rang. It was my mom. She said, Kevin, I'm dying of cancer. And she said, I was given just a few months to live at most. And I just dropped everything, left St. Paul, Minneapolis, St. Paul Airport, and flew home and spent the next several months, 4 months or 5 months with my mom, going to chemo, sitting with her, praying with her, in the room watching as the news unfolded and the stock market collapsed. And sure enough, it changed impact of the election.
So let's go through it again. You're saying, I remember this, but just so our audience is up following along the same line, it was the attack on the markets that changed the election, that potentially put Obama and Biden in office back then.
Yeah, you don't have to take my word for it either. There's a clip, we'll find it on YouTube sometime. There's a clip where now President Biden, who was then senator, and he was running for vice president, but he later came out and made a quote when he was vice president, and he said, with John McCain, he said, if the stock market had not crashed, you would be president today, John. I know that. It was the stock market crash that propelled Barack Obama into the White House and brought us a fundamental change to American landscape. That stock market crash, by the way, it's historically true. If the market crashes during the election season, the party in power almost always loses power and is replaced. And people like George Soros know this. Yeah. They know exactly how that works. In fact, George Soros wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal after the stock market crash explaining exactly how it happened and exactly how it was financial terrorism. And so what I'd shared with Congresswoman Bachman turned out to be true. She then, along with those two guys I mentioned, Major Coughlin and former FBI counterterrorism expert John Guandolo, took that information to the Pentagon. Next thing I know, I'm getting a call from the head of, the managing director of Special Operations Low Intensity Conflict in the Department of Defense, a guy named Rich Higgins, and he says, I need your expertise. They flew me to Washington. I sat down, I drew it all out, explained it to him, and I didn't know at the time, but he'd shared that with the President's Foreign Intelligence Advisory Board, and I saw emails where they said the CIA got caught with their pants down. They had no idea. Nobody was predicting this. We had no intelligence on this. And this guy, this investment manager in Texas, came up with it, you know, basically hire him.
Yeah, which was exciting because it looked like government looking for real solutions, aware of that they got caught with their pants down, and like, okay, we got to hire an expert. We got to figure out what's going on. We got to figure out how to address this. But it didn't go exactly like planned, did it?
Well, that was December of 2008 when all the email traffic was going and when I got flown in to first explain it and so forth. That was December 2008. Keep in mind, the White House was still occupied by George W. Bush, and the Department of Defense was still Bush's Department of Defense. That was going to change in January. You know, there was a changeover. Everything was, we need you, we need you, we need you. Until shortly after the changeover, and then there was a squelch, and we're going to try and shut you down and all that. We'll get into that. We'll get into that. But in the early days, it was obvious that the Defense Department felt that they needed to understand economic warfare, which shocked me because we used to have a Bureau of Economic Warfare. That used to be a part of what the Defense Department did. That used to be part of what Reagan did to bring down the Soviet Union.
Yeah, yeah. And they were ready to spend a significant amount on consulting to say, hey, help us figure this thing out.
Oh, at one
fully
time.
Fully fund the project.
Yeah, at one time they were talking about $10 million budget, and I was talking with my wife, or you know, maybe we're going to have to move to Washington, D.C. Not something I looked forward to, but something they were telling me we needed to do. Yeah, those were heady days. They were looking at economic terrorism. We'll talk about this and even more right after this break. In uncertain times, finding stability in the economy can feel challenging. But what if you could navigate economic volatility while honoring your biblical values? At Timothy Plan, they believe this balance is possible. Timothy Plan filters its volatility-weighted ETFs and family of mutual funds through a biblical pro-life and pro-family lens, so you can see competitive returns and moral responsibility, helping you to weather the economic storms. With Timothy Plan, align your investments with your values while adapting to our ever-changing culture. Since 1994, Timothy Plan has been recognized leader in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan, your bridge between faith, finances, and the future. Visit timothyplan.com or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN or 1-800-846-7526. Investing includes risk, including possible loss of principal. Before investing, carefully consider a fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses contained in the prospectus available at timothyplan.com.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
You know, if we fail to study history, we're doomed to repeat it. That's a famous quote. But here's the fact. I'm with Mike Carter. We're talking about a secret weapon. We're talking about the history of 2008 when the financial crisis happened. There was a whole financial crisis inquiry report. It's a big, thick book, and there's a commission. And I was actually asked to submit information to this commission that never made it into the final report. Someday I'll have to share that. Maybe we'll share that story in a little bit. But in 2008, we had a stock market collapse. I was sitting with my mom in chemotherapy. She was dying. She passed away early 2009, like January 6, 2009. It was really sad. But I'm watching the world collapse around us. And I saw this clip on Mad Money with Jim Cramer or one of those shows on CNBC. Hey, we got that clip. Let's just play that.
Today, and I have a lot of friends who are short sellers, right. A lot of friends
who
are long buyers.
And there's only one short seller.
The traditional people who are allegedly shorting are not, okay?
Right,
they've read the rules. They're not doing it.
Right.
What they come back to, it's very interesting,
yes.
And it's not my theory, but they come back to say, listen, it could be financial terrorism. What a great way to take down America. It's interesting because the FSA position, which is short positions, maybe they want to find out who is doing the shorting. Like in 9/11, do you remember
right.
The airlines went down first and people thought it was bin Laden.
Well, you just heard Christopher Ailman. I mean, he can actually go, right? If they have the
right.
Stock and they lend it out to people to short, he can go figure out who that is,
right.
Or at least get a sense. And he at least feared that he did not know.
It's a national emergency, a financial national emergency.
It is a national emergency.
If people want to look at that,
yes.
I think it's fine. I do believe that the traditional short sellers are not so unpatriotic, if you want to use your term,
right.
That they would be doing this.
No, they're not. Certainly not the individuals
but, you
know, that we
obviously
know.
There's too
right.
much leverage in the system. Mm-hmm. But I think the FSA is to try to find out whether the guy on the other side of the trade is someone who wants to bring down capitalism. Now,
right.
You could say, well, wait a second. Hank Paulson brought down capitalism when they seized Fannie Mae. It certainly wasn't their intent. They're great Americans.
Right, but he
but
was hardly going in the form of anarchy. He
right.
was more going towards socialism.
Well, but, you know, I think that they want to find out whether there
was not
is...
going towards nihilism. Look,
is it... I once did a piece right. in 1987 saying that the best way to bring down America in what I was always afraid of was this kind of, like, let's get James Bond on the case to find out what's going on. Now, obviously, the financial terrorism thing... to me, has to be put on the table just because the regular
right.
short sellers are not doing
but it's
this.
Interesting. Right.
They're
and
not
that's why
doing this.
You can use the word unpatriotic
right.
actually leads you to
They're not doing
that.
This.
Now, Jim,
but we also have so much love now for deposit banks. Well, Wells Fargo could do whatever it wants. You know, I love, well, I've had him on the show a million times. Howard Atkins is great.
That doesn't
Stump
mean you
is
have
great.
To support the Sun stock going
Sunwins instead of 52-week high. U.S. Bank Corp. Great bank. But it is, I mean, Goldman has no home equity loan and car loans. I mean, these are not, I mean, it is a little nutty. Goldman
yes.
does not have exposure to the parts of the loan business that are bad, okay?
No.
It does not have a lot of exposure
right.
to these hedge funds, but it doesn't matter. No one's listening to me.
It's a fascinating
No one's listening to me on Goldman
point.
Sachs. I'm just sitting here feeling like a dope.
And I want to emphasize that the FSA rule here, to your point of it,
right.
it would expose people for their true
right.
intention, it would ban short selling in certain stocks. In any financial companies from now until January 16th, and they can review it before then. But this is basically you can't do it.
I have defended the notion that we should reinstate the rules that I play by, the uptick rule. And the borrow rule. The ban short selling is wrong. It's just wrong. Unless
right.
you had
well,
reason to believe that it was a force that would normally use physical terrorism. That is using financial terrorism. If you have reason mm-hmm. to believe that, then I certainly think that, you know, these people are yelling fire in a crowded theater, and I want to know. I can't tell the Goldman alumni, of which I was in a room where I spoke last year with $4 trillion. I wish they'd all go buy 10% of Goldman. No one's listening to me
well,
that I think Goldman's fine.
Well, it's not $4 trillion
fine.
Anymore.
Yeah, no one's listening to me that I think it's fine. But I
okay.
do think that the regular short sellers are not behind this, and I hope they're not. You know, I applaud Cuomo for wanting to look at anyone who wants to look into it.
Right.
But you can't ban the stuff. That's wrong.
Right.
Just bring back the old rules. They worked for a long time.
All right.
Okay.
Jim,
thank you for the chance.
You know what we got here, Mike? That was Jim Cramer talking with Aaron Burnett. Stop trading, I guess. It wasn't Mad Money. It was stop trading. And they were panicked because all of the banks, all of the broker-dealers were collapsing and failing before their very eyes. The stock market was going down. People don't realize. I think the stock market got down to 6,000 on the Dow. You know, it's been around 40,000 recently, got down to 6,000, absolute panic. What is going on?
IRAs, 401ks were crashing. Everybody thought it was in the world. And he was up. I couldn't get over his animation. Just watching that. It could be financial terrorism, you know, what you'd been saying all along.
Yeah. So he was saying your 401ks became 201ks. Mm-hmm. That was the joke. Yep. And he was saying it could be financial terrorism. We got to get James Bond on the case. Here Jim Cramer was saying this doesn't make sense. So he goes to all of his buddies, the hedge funds, the George Soros types, and he says, what's causing this? Are you doing it? Are you trying to profit from America failing? You know, George Soros profited by breaking the Bank of England in the 70s. Are you doing it, George? George wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. No, I'm not doing it, but here's how it's being done. Naked short selling, credit default swaps, all the things I wrote about in Secret Weapon, all the things I was telling the Pentagon in December 2008. This really was a real life spy novel, yes, like you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and you did a great job of explaining those tools in terms of making it pretty easy to understand what is naked short selling. You know, what are all these tools that are sophisticated tools that people make a lot of money on, but create dangers to the market?
Well, naked short selling is the best described as counterfeiting stock shares. I can't describe it any other way. There's a rule that allows, and Jim Cramer was making this point, don't ban short selling. What happened? Federal government came in and banned short selling on all of the financial stocks. Just banned it outright. And the question is why would you do that? Only you do it if there were some form of financial terrorism. Where did they hear financial terrorism? It was me.
Exactly.
And I was reporting up during all this. But what short selling is if you think a stock is too high, Pets.com in the year 2000, you know, Pets.com, they have no revenues. They just have a website, right? And so I think that's too high. And I'm making up the number, $1,000 a share. Well, gosh, do you have Pets.com? I'll borrow some shares from you. I'll sell them. And I promise I'll give you back 100 shares of Pets.com. So I sell them in the market, and when it collapses, I buy them back and I give you your shares back. That's short selling. It's totally legal, totally allowed under the market rules. And that's what Jim Cramer said that. He said, bring back the old rules, like where you had to borrow shares. Naked short selling is, I don't even borrow them. I just write up an IOU. I owe you, right here, 1,000 shares of Pets.com, and I sell that into the market. That's naked short selling. Totally illegal, by the way. But it was happening rampant across the board. Bernie Madoff helped create the rule that allowed that. Yeah, that Bernie Madoff, the guy that, you know, the Ponzi scheme guy, create the rule. They called it the Madoff exemption. They just made up these rules and said, yeah, you know, we'll let you do it if you're a broker dealer. Sovereign wealth funds in the Middle East started doing this. It was an act of financial terrorism. It's just what Cramer said that was taking place. And nobody knew it until a few of us. Barry Ritholtz wrote about this. Eric Davidson at Wells Fargo talked to me about it, and I sent it into the Pentagon, and they hired me. And that is the basis for this book, Secret Weapon. It's a real-life spy novel. And you know what? They actually made a novel from this. I found out later. Tom Clancy had died, the great novelist. He died. But they started writing additional Tom Clancy novels based on his character, Jack Ryan. And they wrote a novel called Jack Ryan's Shadow Recruit that became a movie that came out in 2014. And it was about a Wall Street guy like me,
yep,
watching the market. And I'm very happy to announce they had Chris Pine play me in the movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it was a good movie. They over-dramatized it in that, yeah, there were foreign governments that wanted to crash our stock market and everything. And they were using the same kind of weapons that were written in Secret Weapon. And Chris Pine, who was better known as playing Captain James T. Kirk in the Star Trek reboot. But yeah, he goes over to Moscow, and while he's in Moscow, this guy tries to kill him, and he ends up killing the guy. Very dramatic. No, that's never. I did take a trip to Moscow with our not to be named producer. We did go to Moscow, and it was an interesting trip. But no, it I didn't kill anybody while I was there.
I'm going to out our producer. It's Russell.
Yeah. Oh, and I wasn't recruited by the CIA while I was there, even though we did talk to the CIA.
But Jack Ryan was a smart investment analyst. What made him effective in his role was he understood the markets and what was going on, how things are being manipulated, very much like what you did.
Oh, yeah. Jack Ryan, that's the role. It was based on this. And no, I didn't make this up. It's not a novel. It's real life. There was financial terrorism. Everybody said, oh, that's crazy. You know, I got these people looking at me. It was crazy. No, it wasn't crazy. Inside the government, they knew it was going on. In fact, Hank Paulson, who was the Secretary of the Treasury, admitted when he wrote his memoirs, after he left office, he admitted that there was financial terrorism. In the summer of 2008, Russia, under Putin, tried to convince China to join them to crash the dollar by dumping their holdings of U.S. Treasury bonds and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac bonds. And they said, hey, we'll do this. How do we know this? Hank Paulson was approached by the Chinese in the summer of 2008 at the Olympics and said, hey, by the way, Russia's trying to crash your economy. And he wrote about it in his book, On the Brink, his memoirs. There's no question.
Dumping bonds, getting rid of our treasuries, that would never happen today, though, would it?
Yeah, no, that's phase three. In the book, Secret Weapon, we're watching it happen before our eyes. When that happened, China owned 10% of our outstanding foreign debt. They decided instead of dumping them all at once, which would cost them dearly, they would slowly work their way out. You know, China, what percentage they hold of our foreign debt today?
I think it's less than 1%.
No, it's 2%.
All right.
So they went
on their way to 1.
10% of our outstanding foreign debt, now they own about 2% today. So Paulson was right. This is what we call phase three. We call it the death of the dollar. You know, bin Laden talked about the death of 1,000 cuts. And, you know, when they attacked the World Trade Center in September 11th, 2001, that was an act of economic terrorism. Why did they hit the World Trade Center? Why didn't they fly into a Michigan-Ohio State football game on a Saturday? It'd be very easy to have flown a plane in there and killed at least 100,000 people. They could have done that. They didn't want maximum casualties. They wanted maximum impact on the American financial system. So they hit the World Trade Center towers. Yep.
And we've been on a spending spree ever since then.
That's right. When that happened, our total outstanding foreign debt was like $5 trillion. It's now $35 trillion. This is bin Laden's death of 1,000 cuts. Other people call it the Cloward-Piven strategy. It's how the average empires end at 250 years. They overspend. It happened in Rome. It's happened in every major civilization at 250 years. That's kind of the death of an empire. It's what we're facing now. You know, we're going to continue talking about this right after the break. We've got more stories to share.
I'm Kevin Sorbo. When you spend money, you consider who you're buying from and the causes they support. If you don't, then you're likely supporting companies that are trying to destroy our country and take away our freedoms. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. They're a cell phone company and a good one. They offer nationwide coverage on the best 4G and 5G networks along with 100% US-based customer support. But here's the deal. Patriot Mobile's mission has nothing to do with cell phones. They carry out their mission by giving back millions of dollars every year to Christian conservative causes that are actively engaged in the fight to save America. Voting is no longer enough to beat the woke. We have to band together, support like-minded companies, and vote with our dollars. That's how we win. Stop supporting companies that want to destroy America and join Patriot Mobile today by visiting patriotmobile.com or call 972-PATRIOT.
Washington said paper money opens the door to every species of fraud and injustice. Jefferson said paper is poverty. Hamilton said to emit an unfunded paper as the sign of value ought not to continue a formal part of the Constitution. The founders hated paper money. So they put a pirate money clause in the Constitution for our state to use. Learn more at transactionalgold.com.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
The secretary and the chairman of the Federal Reserve came those days and talked with members of Congress about what was going on. It was about September 15th. Here's the facts, and we don't even talk about these things. On Thursday at about 11 o'clock in the morning, the Federal Reserve noticed a tremendous drawdown of money market accounts in the United States to the tune of $550 billion was being drawn out in a matter of an hour or two. The Treasury opened up its window to help. They pumped $105 billion in the system and quickly realized that they could not stem the tide. We were having an electronic run on the banks. They decided to close the operation, close down the money accounts, and announce a guarantee of $250,000 per account so there wouldn't be further panic out there. And that's what actually happened. If they had not done that, their estimation was that by 2 o'clock that afternoon, $5.5 trillion would have been drawn out of the money market system of the United States, would have collapsed the entire economy of the United States, and within 24 hours, the world economy would have collapsed. Now, we talked at that time about what would happen if that happened. It would have been the end of our economic system and our political system as we know it.
That was Representative Paul Kanjorski. He was speaking on C-SPAN, and he was explaining why it was that in 2008, 2009, the American government panicked, taking over so many of our banks, flooding the system with money, trying to just shore up and keep America safe.
And he said it would be the end of America, we know it, and we were literally seconds away from something like that happening, according to him, who's a Democrat representative at the time.
Right. And what he did not say is what we'd played in the last segment where we have Jim Cramer. This looks like financial terrorism. It was financial terrorism. It happened. It started on September 11th, 2008, 7 years to the day after the 9/11 attack on the World Trade Center. Oh.
Another according to plan thing.
Yeah, no, this is a scary thing that we faced in 2008. I was rushed into Washington. I was there with my wife and our two little kids, and we were staying at a hotel just outside D.C., and a limo pulls up to pick me up. They take away my cell phone. Marty says, how will you get in touch with me? What if you need something? And you know, it's government that black limo. It actually was one of those big limos that's like the GMC Yukons,
yep,
or something.
Yeah, Suburbans.
So Yukon. They had black suits and glasses, and I'm whisked off, and I'm ushered into a secret office outside the Pentagon. It's not in the Pentagon building itself. I had plenty of time to go in there and out, but a secret office, and we had a confab where I explained what was actually going on in the markets. It was surreal to do that.
Yeah, like a modern-day spy novel.
Yeah, it was. And from that, I spoke to the I briefed members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, also known as the HPC. That's what they call it, the HPC.
That sounds cool and hip. I guess is that what you do if you're kind of an academic nerd and you want to sound cool?
I guess these are the congressmen and congresswomen that oversee the spies. And I talked to a staffer.
Maybe
there.
Forget the academic part.
And you know what they started to do? What happened is I was telling them what was going on, and they were first excited about me sharing this because they could address it, and then they were trying to shut me up. Literally, I got a call from the guy that had hired me. He's passed away since then. His name was Rich Higgins. We actually had him on the Economic War Room show. I would count him as a friend. He worked in the Trump administration. He wrote a famous book called The Memo, and he actually wrote a memo to President Trump and said, the deep state is out to get you. And they say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist. No, the deep state was out to get him. We know that now historically. But, you know, they were out to get me before they were out to get Trump. He called me up and he said, Kevin, we're going to classify all the research you're doing here, and we will put you in jail if you start to talk about it. I said, wait, what, Rich? We got to expose this. We've got to get this out. The American people need to know that we were attacked on 9/11/2008, and it almost destroyed our economy, took our economy down. He said, if you share that information, I said, is it classified now? And he said, not yet, but by this afternoon. So I picked up the phone, called a Marine major who had been my liaison in the Pentagon, Pat Malloy, who was an economic warfare expert. He called a friend of his, a former CIA director, Jim Woolsey, and Woolsey called three sitting senators, John McCain, who was a presidential candidate just a year earlier, John Kyle, a senator from Arizona, and Joe Lieberman, who was the vice presidential candidate on the Democratic ticket under Al Gore. They took copies of my research, stuck it in their safe, and they let the Pentagon know that if they classified it and tried to throw me in jail, they would read that information on the Senate floor the next day. And then I got a call back from Rich. Mr. Freeman, I'm so sorry you misunderstood us. We meant we could classify it for your protection. That's not what you said, Rich. You said, literally, these are people who can make you disappear. I said, what do you mean by that? You know what I mean by it. We can make you disappear. I was threatened. I was threatened to classify it, put me in jail, and they threatened to kill me.
Because there's a narrative there that they did not want out. What was that?
Yeah, the narrative. I said, wait, why are you doing this? You know, under Bush, you guys were all excited. You wanted to get this out. Well, the Obama administration said flat out, you've implicated Russia and two sovereign wealth funds in the Middle East and how it had an impact on our election in 2008. We can never, ever, ever let it be known that Russia could possibly interfere in an American election and help President Obama.
Now, wait a second. What election was this? This was the Obama, Russia interference in an Obama election?
Yeah, little did I know they would pick that playbook up and use it against Trump when he was running Russia, Russia, Russia. You know, I have so many stories from that. And I feel like I can share some of them now. We've got it in some of it in the book, Secret Weapon. You know, we've got, and you know, I did speak at the Naval Postgraduate School, interviewed and spoke with General Jerry Boykin and CIA directors. And there's even a story when we were trying to get this information out, we felt like we needed Hollywood to tell the story. So I flew out to Los Angeles with Major Malloy was there and former CIA director Woolsey showed up there and my buddy David Hemingway. And we were sitting around waiting because we had handpicked Bruce Willis to help carry this story. There's a long history of the CIA working with movie stars and helping, you know, get intelligence and stories out. So we were going to get the story out through Bruce Willis, and we were waiting by the pool at the Roosevelt Hotel in Hollywood for hours, and Bruce Willis never showed up. We were told he was going to show up. We found out later he was filming a movie in Toronto. I don't think he even got the message. And I'm sitting there with a former CIA director. I hand him a copy of the book, Unrestricted Warfare by the Chinese. Mm-hmm. Oh, what is this? I've never seen this before. I was like, former head of the CIA, you've never seen Unrestricted Warfare? I educated him on that. And I said, Mr. Woolsey, I would love to help you understand some of this. So maybe the best way to do it, I rented the Bruce Willis Die Hard 4 movie, which was about a financial takedown, another story kind of off Secret Weapon. And we sat in a suite at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel and we watched Die Hard 4 with former CIA director.
And Unrestricted Warfare is what?
Unrestricted Warfare is a book from China, 1999, two Chinese colonels, where they literally say one of the ways to take down a superpower is financial terrorism, and they mentioned George Soros. He would know how to do it. And as I said earlier, he wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal describing what I'd said was happening, only he didn't tie it to the sovereign wealth funds, to Russia, or any financial terrorism. He just said, oh yeah, this is how our system was taken down. And I showed him the weaknesses in our system, which they did shore up to some degree. I've heard later, I met with the Inspector General, David Kotz of the SEC, about naked short selling. They wrote an Inspector General report about this. They did work at the SEC to help shore up the thing. I met another general. I was briefing at the Naval War College. He was a three-star Army general who would soon become the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, named General Mike Flynn. In fact, General Flynn invited me at one point via Frank Gaffney, my friend. I got a phone call at the inauguration of President Trump and saying, hey, would you join the National Security Council? General Flynn wants you there to explain economic warfare and be the expert. Of course, he was out in a week. Mm-hmm. It happened again. Steve Bannon, when he was a White House advisor, I got a weird phone call, from email, actually, on a Sunday. Can you talk to me? I'm sitting in church, and this email pops in from Steve Bannon saying, I want you to come brief the White House on what financial, economic warfare, financial terrorism is, you know, all of that. And so I call him on Monday. I FedEx him a ton of stuff that arrives at the White House Tuesday, Wednesday. He calls me back, is all excited about it. And on Friday, it's announced that Steve Bannon is leaving the White House. I guess now he's, you know, they're talking about putting him in jail for contempt of Congress. But yeah, that's Steve Bannon. So it's been a wild ride.
All these guys didn't fit the narrative, and they had a way of moving them out. But what I appreciate so much about the work you're doing, Kevin, and we're doing at the Institute here is this is not about sensationalism. This is about helping people understand how to use their money to protect themselves, how to have the right game plan. And through all this turmoil, as you're going through that, there's a lot of noise out there. End of America 2011, end of America 2020, end of America 2013. They're all creating fear, but didn't really have real solutions. And that's what this program is about, for our audience to start to say, all right, let's develop solutions to know what's coming ahead and how do we manage through that.
That's right. That's why we wrote the book Pirate Money. It describes not all the real life spy novel stuff, but it describes the answer to the phase three attack on America, which is attempt to destroy the dollar. How do you protect yourself? How do you protect your family and your money? How do you protect America or your state? That's all in the book Pirate Money. You can get more information by listening to this podcast or from piratemoneybook.com. It's been fun sharing with you our story. This is Kevin Freeman. Happy Saturday from Pirate Money Radio.